Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. And today our very special guest is former State Senator Joel Anderson. Now he's one of four candidates running for supervisor in the 2nd District to fill the seat being vacated by Diane Jacob due to term limits. It's a very important race since the five county supervisors govern all of the county's unincorporated areas. Senator Anderson has served in both the State Assembly and State Senate, and before that as a member of the Padre Dam Municipal Water District Board. He holds a degree in finance, has the endorsement of some prominent conservative leaders locally, and he's long considered himself a fighter for the taxpayers, earning 100% ratings from the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association and California Taxpayers Association. Joel, welcome to the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me on.
So can you start by telling us, what made you decide to run for supervisor?
Well, after 12 years in the legislature and how crazy it is up there, I was shocked when I returned to San Diego to find that our county was in the same free fall as our state. And I believe that we deserve more from county government. We have a homeless issue that's running amok, and yet no one seems to care enough to do. They like to talk about it, but they just don't like to do anything about it. Our roads and infrastructure are suffering greatly. We have a big shift from our road money being shifted to downtown trolleys. And, you know, I live in Alpine, and one of the concerns I have is fire safety. And when you're in the rural portions and you're saying that you want to create more bike lanes and fewer fire lanes, I think it's the wrong direction. And then finally, of course, the cost of housing and the cost of living. So I'm turning 60 next week. All my friends have grandkids, and all I hear is how they're going to Phoenix to visit the grandkids because our county government has failed to produce what we enjoyed growing up here in East County, which is affordable living and jobs and opportunity. And I think that can change.
Yeah. Well, let's talk in a little more detail about some of those issues. You've indicated that fixing our roads is a priority for you, something I imagine a lot of voters would like to see happen. How would you find the funding for that, and what are your priorities when it comes to those roads?
Well, first of all, there's more than one way to approach it. So let me just start off with the basics. I've gotten over the years money for roads for San Diego County, and the county chose not necessarily to use that money.
Really?
I think that we could get more money from the state for San Diego if we work through our legislature. Most of the supervisors spent little to no time in Sacramento lobbying for a bigger slice of the pie. I believe that there's room for more money for San Diego if we went up there and asked for it.
You have the legislative experience, presumably, to know whose doors to knock on up.
Absolutely. And then the second thing is, there are things that we can do in the interim while we're waiting for the roads to be fixed or expanded. When you look at the 70 acres next to Gillespie, that is precious land that if we were to develop, we could create jobs and opportunity locally so people aren't taking the 52 in the 8 in the morning. You know, right now at the airport, there's 3,000 jobs. It's about $12 million worth of tax revenue every year that goes to our roads and infrastructure, goes to our public safety. If we were to develop those 70 acres, we could quadruple it and maybe get 10 or 12,000 jobs there. That means 500 to 1,000 cars would be off the road. But more importantly, that means 500 to 1,000 workers would be able to get home in time to see their kids play soccer at night.
Good point. So what kind of development do you envision around Gillespie Field?
Well, it would have to be of the nature of linked to airports. But as a legislator, I had the good fortune of talking to a lot of the CEOs that have clean tech and biotech in the UTC.
Yeah, and I was wondering, why does all that have to go to UTC and Poway and, you know, La Jolla instead of East County, where we've got
you're
land
absolutely
and
right.
People who need jobs.
And so when I've talked to them, I asked them where their employees were, and they said most of them live here in the backcountry, in East County. So if we were to work with them to set up some satellite offices, then they could telecommute from a satellite office. I understand it has to be secure, but they could certainly do it. But the problem is, when you're developing that corridor, it involves the city of El Cajon, the city of CNT, and Lakeside. And that's where the county plays a role in creating that JPA to do the things that are necessary to develop those jobs. But if we were able to develop those jobs, we would ease those freeways and increase the quality of life for everyone.
Very good points. What is your approach to homelessness? It's a complex issue, made more so by a Supreme Court decision recently that prohibits law enforcement from arresting homeless people for sleeping in public places if there aren't any shelter beds available. The county did recently move forward on some initiatives to explore locations for shelters and so forth in places like Spring Valley and Lakeside. Where do you stand on how to solve the homelessness crisis within the parameters of, you know, what you can do after that court ruling?
Well, one of my criticisms is the county's been very slow to move. We know we've had this huge issue, and yet they keep talking about it, but I don't see any action.
Right.
You know, we had a hepatitis outbreak. People died.
True.
And it took them 2 weeks before they made any kind of movement to solve that problem. We need government that's more responsive to the people. So let me tell you, you're absolutely correct. The homelessness issue isn't one type of homelessness. We have families who were living from paycheck to paycheck because the cost of living is so high, rent is so high, that if they were sick for a few days, they may have been kicked out of their apartment because they didn't have the money to pay the rent. And that's unfortunate. So that's one group. Then we have mental health. A big portion of it is mental health related, where people haven't had access to the drugs necessary to stabilize their condition, or they just haven't had the ability to get the mental health that they need. So that needs to be triaged out of the homeless. Then you have alcoholism and drug addiction. And then there's many more lesser groups that are out there, but
right.
Those are the major groups. So when you're thinking about it, one of the things that I plan to do is push for a benchmark. We have a lot of great organizations that are doing incredible work, like East County Transitional Living Center. They did 525 people. And if you stay in their program for the first 30 days, 92% of the people will finish the program. And it takes about a year, sometimes 2 years. But when you end the program, you have housing. Normally it's an apartment, and you have a job, a stable job. We're returning people back to society. And for many of these, they've lost their children because of the living conditions, and they help them unify their families. And when you unify those families, you're giving them a great reason to stay together and be successful. But throwing money at the issue without benchmarking success is just a waste of money. I want to do things that actually lifts and helps those people in a meaningful way.
One gap we see mentioned sometime in East County, El Cajon, I should say, is doing more than many of the other communities, and the East County Transitional Living Center is doing a very good job of getting a lot of people off the streets and getting them help. The first part of their program is government funded, that 30 days, but the longer term part isn't, because it's a religious-based program. So it's great. You can get the job training and all that if you're of their particular faith persuasion, the Christian persuasion. But there's no similar program for people who might be Jewish or Muslim or atheist or whatever.
Right.
Anything else. Is that a gap that maybe should be addressed, something to help with the longer-term needs of the folks that don't qualify for that program?
So possibly. What the whole idea of the benchmarking is to look at what programs are working, to encourage people to donate to them, and the programs that aren't as successful, discouraging that and trying to change their programs to more successful plans. So perhaps that would be one of the solutions. Everyone thinks they understand the legislature, and then when you get there, it's completely different than what.
Because I've worked up there. You're right.
Right. Well, part of it is you're not privy to all the information, and when you start going to all the hearings, when you start getting the briefings, you find out there's a lot that's not out in the public eye.
Right.
And that helps form a better opinion. I don't want to get out too far in advance saying it's specifically what's going to be done. What I do want to do is create the benchmark, figure out what's the most successful, and then encourage more of it. So what you're suggesting makes good sense, but I don't know if there's a program out there already, and if there is, what we can do to encourage it in whether it's successful or not.
Yeah. What is your approach to easing the housing crisis in our region so that, as you've stated, our children won't have to move out of state? And within that, how do you balance demand for affordable housing against concerns over sprawl development in rural areas that we hear from the rural residents, and high-density housing or high-rises that some of the people in the urban and suburban communities. In other words, there's a little bit of NIMBYism, and yet there's some real concerns behind that, too.
So I co-sponsored a bill with Scott Wiener, SB 35, and I've been attacked because I sponsored this bill with a Democrat, but I did 453 bills with Democrats in my 12 years in the legislature. And the bill made great sense to me. What it said was a developer could opt in to this program if they were going to build high-density, low-income within a half a mile of a trolley station. You know, we in East County, in the unincorporated area, have crazy projects put into our area for low-income because the land's cheaper. But the problem is there's no jobs. And there's no mass transit for them to get a job. So if you don't have a car, you're setting people up for failure, not success. So it makes perfectly good sense that if you don't own a car and you're in low income, that you be put close to mass transit and you don't need the parking. And because it's inside of a city that's well regulated, it shouldn't take 2, 4, or 6 years to get those permits. The bill requires that if it's fewer than 150 units, the city has 60 days to give them a permit and give all the requirements. They shouldn't have to rethink it because they're not impacting the roads. They shouldn't have to rethink it because it's already scheduled for residential. And if it's over 150 units, they have 90 days. Now, that streamlines it, keeps the cost down, and it's an opt-in. If a developer didn't think that that would help them deliver a lower-cost product, they wouldn't have to do it. But if they think that having a system that tells them everything they have to do within 90 days would help lower the cost of the project. And that's what developers are saying. It absolutely does help them. But what too often happens is those developers start off with a low cost project, but over the course of time of trying to get permitted, it can take up to 6 years. And by that time, the cost of goods, the cost of wood, everything's gone up in their projects.
Yeah, ours expiring. Sometimes they have to do them over again.
So you know exactly what I'm talking about. But that was a solution there. I reached across party lines to joint author this bill.
If we
keep saying no to everything, we'll never solve any problem. So we have to figure out where it makes sense.
Sure.
In building something out in Descanso that is prone to failure makes no sense at all, or Alpine or Pine Valley. But if you're next to a trolley station, that's where density should go.
Yeah, that makes sense. In your interview with the Union Tribune, you stated that you oppose Measure A, the ballot measure that would allow the public to vote on big housing projects that require waivers of the general plan. The aim of the backers is to limit sprawl development and things like high fire risk areas. Can you explain why you're opposed to Measure A?
So it never finishes there. That's always the camel's head into the tent. So what happens if the city of Chula Vista and the city of San Diego, a nefarious person decides that they're going to build a horrible project and they choose to do it in the backcountry? And because they have more votes downtown San Diego than we do, they can force that project on us. I don't want to see that as a weapon to put every pedophile in the world in our district. I don't want to see that as a weapon to put every horrible project into our district. And I think that we should decide who we want as neighbors, and that we should have the most say on whether that project's good for our community or not good for our community. And I'm worried that when you allow big cities downtown to make all the decisions, and you were to say everyone has to do 1,000 new houses, and then they turn around and say, we're going to put 20,000 houses in Descanso, and we don't want those houses in our area, so we're going to vote it in your area, and we have no say?
Wow.
That's not right. I believe the vote should stay closest to the project, and that's who should have the most say.
What about the Measure B, the Newland Sierra project? Do you have a position on that one?
Look, it was approved. The community agreed with it, and now they're doing a redo. So if the community's good with it, I'm never going to tell somebody they can't build something if the community wants to build it.
Well, actually, there was a lot of community opposition to it, and I think it was something like 20 times higher density than what the general plan originally allowed. That was one of those where the supervisors at the time voted to waive those requirements.
But everybody voted for it. Their county supervisor supported it. So what we're going to say is we don't live in that area and we're going to dictate to them that they can't have that housing. I don't think that's right.
Okay. So you think the supervisors who represent the area should have the vote?
I think the people closest to the project should have the say. I don't want them telling me what can be done in Pine Valley, nor do I want to tell them what can be done in their neighborhood.
Okay. Supervisor Diane Jacob has long held coffees with the community all over the place. I think she's been to just about every town in the district over and over. Is that a tradition that you would continue if you're elected?
Well, I think, Miriam, if you look back for 12 years, I had at least 10 coffees throughout the district every year. Plus, I had a open house at the end of the year in El Cajon where mm-hmm. over 5,500 people would show up. So being close to the people is really important to me, and I've already shown that that's my history, so that should be my future.
San Diego County has long ambulance response times in some places, sometimes an hour or more in rural areas, even on major highways, parts of them like 97 or 67. Do you think our county needs to mandate faster ambulance response times, at least on the highways or for residents that live in the heart of a rural town such as Alpine? If the state of Missouri can have an average response time of just a few minutes statewide for ambulances, why can't San Diego County do better?
So I agree with you wholeheartedly. One of my pet issues are these bike lanes. I'm for bike lanes. I'm not against it, but not in lieu of roads. They have to be in addition. And the reason why is it's a direct attack on seniors. When you lower the response times because the ambulances have to be careful when bikes are there, they can't speed, they can't do stuff. And when we're restricting access to healthcare, emergency healthcare, because of it, it's the wrong path. See, I oppose those bike lanes that Nathan Fletcher has pushed so hard for because I think it puts seniors in jeopardy.
Yeah, and we're talking in the downtown San Diego area.
It goes all over.
Oh, okay.
Okay. If you don't build the roads that you can provide the safety net, then you're failing the people. So we need to have it. Now, there's another issue in that you didn't touch upon that most people don't know about, but in many parts of the county, you don't have GPS service.
True.
And those signs the county put up years and years ago have faded out. So I've talked to emergency services, and they have said that they would love to see a whole bunch of new signs because when they're in the backcountry, and this includes Ramona. Ramona has this issue as well.
Yeah, Julian, they get lost all the time trying to find people.
Right. And so we need to have clearer signs to make sure that there's no hesitation in getting there. So there's a lot of things to be done that mm-hmm. we should be done.
Also, now, I wonder about the per capita number of ambulances.
Well,
right now, there's very few for such
a
large area.
Net, we may have to increase the service.
Yeah, you can have great roads, but
so,
if there's not enough ambulances.
So one of the things that you probably don't know about, but in my last 2 years in the legislature, I reached out to Governor Brown. And, you know, every time there's a fire and SDG&E or any other utility gets fined, that money goes to the general fund. And we never see a dime of it. It doesn't improve our community, but that fine came from our rates. Nobody else wrote that check except for us.
Sure.
So I went to Governor Brown and I said, what would you think if when those fines come, that 10% of that money stay in the area where the fine was assessed? He loved the idea and he had his chief of staff work. I was in the super minority. The tail does not wag the dog. There was no way I could get that bill of that magnitude through that legislature without the gravitas of the governor's office.
Right.
So his chief of staff worked with me for a year. Unfortunately, she was struck down with terminal cancer, brain cancer, and within 2 weeks she had passed away. And unfortunately, it was too late for somebody else to pick up the mantle and help me with it. But 10% of that money would stay in it. And that 10% of money, in this last fine, it would have been over $38 million.
Wow.
So when you're thinking about fire protection moving forward and public health, that's the money that we could have used.
Yeah, that was my next question was going to be that wildfires are such big concerns for everybody here. What actions did you support in Sacramento to improve firefighting resources and fire protection? And what ideas do you have going forward for
right,
that?
Right. So what I think that we could still pursue this. I don't think it's too late. And I think that Nathan Fletcher would partner with me and we could hit the halls of Sacramento and try to get this passed because the whole state has felt the dangers of fire. They didn't before, but they certainly have in the last few years. So I think the time is right to push a bill like this. If we get that money, then we could go back and close the eaves on many seniors' homes where they can't afford it. We could use that for wood chipping all year round, not just at certain times. We could use it to improve the Ramona Airport so the deployment could come earlier. You know, they usually, a few years ago, we had extremely dry conditions, but they had it calendared when the tanker would be relocated to Southern California. And I wrote a letter to the governor and requested that we get that tanker sooner. And fortunately, the governor sent it sooner,
yeah,
based on the condition, not on a calendar. The condition really is the derivative of pushing that. So we would be able to do that. But think about it, $38 million. We could have more fire trucks that are rural-based. You know, your rural fire truck is entirely different than your city truck. So we could have more.
True.
And we also could increase the ambulances and the response times. So all this could be taken without any additional taxes. And it makes good sense because every part of the state that's impacted the greatest would also have that advantage in their community. So I think there's a lot to do. Now, I will tell you that when we went through the Witch Creek fire, mm-hmm, we lost a lot of houses in my district. And in that, the county said that they were going to speed up permitting so people could get back into their homes quicker. Well, 2, 4, 6 years later, people are still trying to get back into their homes.
True.
They weren't permitted. And under our state law, you are going to lose your tax deduction under Prop 13. So I ran a bill twice for 2 extensions to ensure those people weren't penalized with additional taxes because the county failed to give them a permit.
Okay. I want to talk for a moment about the situation in Julian, where a lot of the residents up there have come to us voicing concerns over what they say have been often slower fire and ambulance response times since the county dissolved their volunteer fire department and took over services. Now, CAL FIRE disputes it, but when I keep asking for response time records and station staffing, I'm not getting them. Would you commit, if you're elected, to insist on receiving and reviewing the response time records and station staffing records since the date the county took that over? And if they are falling short, take some action, you know, to help protect the safety of Julian residents and, for that matter, the many visitors to this backcountry treasure.
So, absolutely. When I was in the legislature, we would ask for these reports all the time. Fire safety in this community is so important, and yet people downtown don't understand. They treat us as if we started the fire. We're the canary in the coal mine. We're the ones that report the fire and try to put it out before it gets too big. Fires don't know any borders, so we all need to work together to solve these issues. Now, if you have qualified people, there should be a path that if they want to help, they can help.
Yeah, now, I mean, I know I'm told up there by a, you know,
right,
a former.
There's a lot of qualified people. Now,
watching a house burn down.
Let me take it on a bigger level.
Help fight it.
When we went to that contract with CAL FIRE, and CAL FIRE does a great job. All these people are well-wishers, and they're great people.
Right, hardworking firefighters.
Nobody went back to our local fire chiefs and asked them if they would like to put a plan together. I think more input is better when it comes to public safety, not less input. And yet this county just chose one provider and never looked outside of that to see if what our local fire chiefs could have provided. And when I worked on the bill with the governor to keep that money, that 10% to use towards fire, I worked closely with those fire chiefs, and they were a wealth of information, and they've been over backwards trying to help me usher this bill through. So I think that when you have a resource like that, you should never mitigate it. You should always include them at the table in decision process.
Okay, thank you so much for that. The California Small Business Association once named you their Legislator of the Year back in 2011. How might you assist small business owners at a county level?
Well, look, one of the biggest problems we have is roads and infrastructure, affordable housing. There's just really not enough attainable housing out there. So when they go to recruit employees, it's hard to get employees. When they're fighting to get their products and services transported around the county, it's hard to do with all the potholes and all the trouble and all the traffic. Simple things would make a huge difference. Relocating satellite offices from UTC locally, all those people that provide those products to those companies in UTC, could provide them locally. They wouldn't have to necessarily travel across town, which would be make it more available to smaller companies. So there's a lot of things that we can do. I think that we need to be innovative, but most of it is not passing ordinances that harm them. And let me tell you about what's happened recently. That's a grave concern to a lot of the district. The county arbitrarily decided that if you have a parade, you now don't have to get just one permit, but everybody who participates in the parade has to get their own permit. No one's ever made a dime on a parade. Right. Never. But it builds community. And what makes us great in East County is a great sense of community. When you go to Ramona, they're proud. You go to Alpine or Pine Valley, they're proud. Santee's proud. Poway's proud. And yet we're going to dissolve through greed of the county that we're going to make it so expensive, it's going to be prohibitive to have this. They do that all the time with small business, and it's wrong.
As a supervisor, you may have the opportunity to serve on SANDAG. What are your priorities for transportation in our region? You've mentioned them briefly, but including balancing the demand for highways, for more highways, especially solving problems on 52 and 67, 94, versus demand for increased mass transit and, of course, state mandates to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, you know, due to climate change.
You have to have a greenhouse plan. I mean, that you can't apply for any money from the state. You can't get other monies in there. You can't move the ball at all unless you have a greenhouse plan, and yet people seem to ignore it.
Yeah.
And no one's ever accused me of being a huge environmentalist, but I think they'd be shocked to learn that I have an electric car parked in your driveway.
Ah, good for you.
So, and I've driven an electric car for over a year. You know what? There are paths for us to accomplish these goals, but we have to do it in a way that lifts everybody. It can't be putting people out of work in order to move forward. So I think that with SANDAG, one of the issues I have is that we passed a bond. I was promised, like every taxpayer in East County, that that money would go to our roads in East County. And yet they diverted more than $120 million of our money for a trolley. If you want to use our money for the trolley, come back with a new vote. Let us vote on it and do it. Now, I'm not against the trolley, but it can't be at the exclusion of our roads and infrastructure. What you're saying is our trolley's more important than seniors' health in the backcountry because we can't get an emergency vehicle to them because you failed to build the roads that you promised.
Okay. One of the things that we hear a lot from people in the, especially the southeast part of the county, Hacumba, Boulevard, Campbell, is they're concerned about this onslaught of industrial scale energy projects. Wind turbines taller than the tallest skyscrapers in downtown San Diego and so forth, some of which have exploded and caused brush fires and thrown off blades. And there's issues of lights flashing in people's homes and property values going down, as well as headaches and sleep disruption and things like that, and measurable drops right in property values. I would like to ask you how you balance the need, the demands for energy versus the concern of the
residents. You can't have it both ways. You can't have it. You tell me that you want green, and you tell me that if we go green, there's going to be more jobs. But then you say, not you personally, but then it's said, well, we don't want it in our backyard. You have to put wind turbines where there's wind. And one of the things that the county did is it requires solar on every house. I've been to the beach. In the summer, when you have most sun, it's foggy until noon. I live in Alpine. My solar, there's never enough fog. My solar goes from the moment the sun comes up to the moment it goes down. It makes great sense for me to have solar. It doesn't make great sense for Mission Bay to have solar. It doesn't make sense for me to have wind turbines if there's no wind. You have to go where it is. So we have to make a conscious decision. We can't say that we're trying to save the planet, but we're not really going to do it in a meaningful way. So if we want to have green projects, we have to put them where they make sense. Right now, we're making housing 30 to 50,000 more expensive with requirements of solar in communities where the solar won't produce any electricity or very little. It makes sense that we go where we need to go. Now, it's a different debate if people decide that they don't want to see a green economy. I get that. But if you're telling me that you want to save the planet, then you're going to have to put those projects where it makes sense.
So there, you don't think there should be any concern for the people who are already living there, who are maybe going to be negatively impacted, where the power isn't necessarily going to that.
Everybody's negatively impacted no matter where you go with it. So if you want to be green and you want to be serious about it, then you've got to take serious answers. And look, I know that I'm losing votes by saying this, but on the flip side, putting solar turbines where there's no wind makes no sense. Now, if they wanted to say, we don't want solar turbines, we prefer sea solar and solar work.
Wind turbines, I think you meant to say. But instead of wind turbines, if a community said we'd accept solar but not wind.
And it penciled that there's light, mm-hmm. then that makes sense. I'm not confined to just doing that. But what I fought in Sacramento was the inconsistency of the rhetoric and the action. They always talk about all these things, but when it came to actually doing stuff that made a difference, they didn't do it. Requiring solar on every new house when they live in an area that solar doesn't produce in an amount that is cost effective, when we have other areas of the county that are way more effective, that's just stupid. And it's a waste of money, and it prohibits young families from finding affordable housing.
But I want to circle back on the energy issue with a follow-up question. When I've spoken with some of the people out there where there's already a lot of these big projects, they're telling me their property values are plummeting. They can't even sell the homes, some of them. Do you think that if it's decided that for the greater good of green energy or whatever, that you should build a project that's going to have that big of a negative impact, should it be treated like we do with freeways where they do eminent domain or at least offer somebody to be bought out or pay them for the reduced, the lost value on
their home?
We need
to be fair to those residents. I am not trying to punish those residents. I'm simply saying you can't tell me that we have to have a green plan and then tell me that we're going to put green projects where they don't produce green energy. I don't have that. I don't have a specific project before me. But I would be very interested in understanding all the elements before we made a decision. And my door would be open to all my constituents who live in the area to come in. You know, one of the things that...
Senator, in the past, you've taken significant donations from SDG&E and from energy companies, developers,
sure.
and so forth. What would you say to those who are concerned about potential conflicts of interest, especially on land use decisions that
so
make such
I
a big
did
impact
a-
on folks?
I did a bill years ago going after Google on privacy. I was a big privacy nut. I think that we need, I wrote the privacy law. I got a letter. I mean, I got a legislative year award from the Freedom Foundation for writing the privacy law on our cell phones. So I take privacy very seriously. And I was going after Google because they were just selling our data like crazy. And they were upset with it, and they went to a reporter and said, well, he's taken $1,000 from Microsoft, and Microsoft's our opponent. And I went back to the reporter and I said, well, I'm allowed to take up to $4,400. So if they think they can buy me, they should send me $4,400. And if I pull the bill, then they're right. But if I don't pull the bill, I'm an honest man. So, you know, I can't even tell you all the money I've taken because I don't ask where the money comes from. I figure that they're supporting me because there's something that I'm doing or they think I'll do that's correct. But I've taken money from people who support the Second Amendment, and I've taken money from people who support gun control. I never qualify it because my vote can't be bought. And I always vote what I think is the right thing to do for my constituents. And I'll continue to do that. But that's something that we were at that forum at GMIA, and some of my opponents said that they will never take a dime from whatever group. And my response was, that's good, because they know they can be bought.
Interesting.
If you give me money, there's no guarantee I'm going to vote with you.
Okay. Major sand mining projects are proposed in Lakeside's El Monte Valley, which is an equestrian area with homes out there and quite a few threatened wildlife species and valley fever spores. Another one is proposed along the Sweetwater River at Cottonwood Gulf next to a federal wildlife preserve. To what degree would you balance concerns of the residents and the wildlife protection issues versus the demand for sand to meet roadway and construction project needs?
We absolutely need sand because we're importing it from out of county. But it's not fair to ask a person without an environmental study saying it's going to be safe. We have to have an environmental study saying that that's going to be safe. It's not going to create valley fever. We also need to have assurances. You know, too often people say, well, I'm not going to tear that tree down. And you say, well, it's going to be a $1,000 fine if you tear that tree down because it's heritage. It's been here. And then they come in and they cut it down and say, here's $1,000. That's not good enough. When you're asking a community to have 300 trucks drive through their community and they say it's not going to impact them, then we need hard proof that it really won't impact them. Because after the project starts, it's really hard to control that.
Too late, yeah.
So I think that front-loading all those questions and really nailing it down is the most important thing. Now, I know Steel Canyon is doing their going to start their environmental. Excuse me, Cottonwood. So I haven't seen it. I know that El Monte Valley is going through the process. I haven't seen all the stuff. Frankly, we're 3 weeks from the election. I really don't have time to look at it. And if I don't get elected, it won't be as important. But when I do get elected, I'll give it my undivided attention because those two communities deserve the very best from us and they deserve strong representation.
Okay. What are your views on short-term rentals of homes such as Airbnb? Should they be regulated in the unincorporated areas?
Look, I am as free market as you can get. And I believe that you can do anything you want on your property up until it infringes on my property. So we know that in some communities, the Airbnb regulation has been very good. It hasn't hurt the business at all. In fact, it's enhanced it because there were good neighbors. And then we've also seen terrible failures in regulation. So I think that we can strike a balance. Most of the stuff that we're talking about is not reinventing the wheel, but right. Simply looking to see what wheel rolls the farthest and the best.
There you go. Can't have the wild parties that impact
right,
the
right. You know, I rented Airbnb up in Lake Tahoe, and they said at 1 o'clock, you will be fined, I think it's $500 if you're not shut down. Yeah. Well, you know, you can have a good time up to 1 o'clock, and 1 o'clock you can cut it off and not bother your neighbors.
Right.
But I think that that's something that can be explored that makes sense. But what I don't want to do is tell somebody, you bought this property, you have property rights, but we're going to ignore all your property rights. And with the cost of living, if I'm able to put a granny flat on my property and then rent it and supplement my fixed income as a senior, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
As long as we can keep people independent and keep them out of the system, I want to do everything I can to keep seniors independent.
Okay, very good points there. Health and Human Services constitutes a big part of the county budget. Can you talk a little bit about what your priorities would be in that area?
Well, we've already touched on it a little bit with mental health. So San Diego County has 100 beds dedicated to mental health, and yet we have 3.5 million people living in the county. It's wrong. We can't possibly keep up with the need. So I feel bad for the law enforcement officer who gets called on a 5150, which means the person's having an episode. They pick them up. They take them over to the facility, and the facility's full. So now where do they go? They go to the emergency room. They drop them off there. 24 hours later, they're released. The people haven't been helped. The officer is put in a terrible predicament. And yet we may go through that cycle time and time and time again. We need to build more mental health beds. We need to be working on it. I don't agree with everything that Nathan Fletcher says, but he's been absolutely correct on this issue. And I look forward to working with him. He fought hard to keep those beds and those mental health hospitals open. I'll be there right there with them because I believe that that's part of the solution of the homeless issue. If we could triage and get these people the help they need, we could get them off the streets.
Yeah, very good. And I neglected to mention that of the others in this race, one of them, Kenya Taylor, this is kind of her area as a...
She lobbied me in Sacramento.
Interesting, yeah, as a mental health
because
specialist.
Because by the way, I was very open to her message because I think this is not a partisan issue at all. I believe this is a human rights issue, and we should be doing there providing the services that these people need.
Yeah. One of your other opponents, Mayor Steve Voss from Poway, they've had a water issue up there in the past, as was in the news recently with the water contamination issue that they had at their reservoir. But you mentioned that you had a few thoughts to share on that as someone who formerly served on a water board, how you might have handled that issue differently.
Well, I think that when you're on a water board, you have a lot of responsibility. Never should you put the safety of your citizens in jeopardy. And I think some of the things that are really important is maintenance makes a difference, and you should never defer the maintenance. When I was at Padre, we never deferred maintenance because there's enough things that go wrong on their own. But when you defer that maintenance, you are putting things in jeopardy.
It's like with your car. Every time we don't do something.
Right. And then the second thing is Poway is a closed system, and the city council is their water board. And over the last 10, 20 years, every water district has been asking and looking for emergency hookups with other districts. I know at Padre, we had emergency hookups. And the reason why we did it is if we had a problem, it would be minimalized. It wouldn't go a week because we could borrow water from the next district. And we all sign mutual aid, and we want to help each other because we're not an island. We have to work together. And I would suggest that in the future, Poway should go ahead and make an emergency hookup with Ramona so they have a backup system so their businesses for a week are without business. There's other things that could be done, and I think that this is the time to reevaluate where you are and whether it's a good practice to be a closed system where you have no help from anyone else or to anyone else. And I think that this should be a resource to Ramona, as Ramona should be a resource to them.
Okay. Supervisor Jacob has long championed building libraries in rural communities. Residents in Santee and La Mesa, which are incorporated cities get some help from the county, but not as much. And yet these are cities that haven't been able to come up with the money to replace very old, smaller libraries. And I've had people in both those cities ask me to ask the candidates, is there anything more the county can do to help them get libraries in their neighborhoods too?
Santee certainly has been shortchanged. I plan to work with those communities to get them the libraries that they deserve. You know, there's not enough money to go around to everybody.
Right.
And you have to make decisions. And Diane placed the money where she thought it was best. And I'm not in her shoes, so I'm not going to judge what she did, what she didn't do. But I think that there's a path to get it all done.
Yeah.
I don't believe you should punish one community over another. I think that there's enough resources to help everybody. I do think that my priority, though, is going to be infrastructure and making sure that we have roads, attainable housing, and that everyone has the same services throughout the district.
Got it. Another thing that Supervisor Jacob was known for is her legacy of prioritizing preserving open space and creating lots of parks, trails, nature preserves, and so forth. Is that something that you would attempt to continue where it's feasible, or do you think we have enough of those things?
Well, I think we need to develop what we have right now. I mean, I love going hiking. I love using bike trails. I think that's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. But I, when I look at it, and I think that we just spent tens of millions of dollars on more open land, and Santee doesn't have a library. I want to invest in land, but I think the children of Santee, deserve access to a world-class library. I don't want to take from children to buy more land that's not used. And I just think that we have a real opportunity. Now, that's me. Other people could believe that buying more rural land and taking it off the tax rolls is more important than kids in libraries. But that's not where I'm at. I want to put kids first.
Got it. As you've noted, there's a lot of competing priorities for spending in our region. And we've talked about ideas for some new initiatives and things to spend the money on. But there's only limited resources available. So I would like to ask, are there any areas where you would either favor reducing spending, or do you have any new ideas for increasing revenues? Not necessarily raising taxes, but maybe other, you know, other means of bringing more revenues into the region.
I think we have plenty of I think that we have plenty of taxes in fees. I think that we're gone off the deep end. I do think we need to do a better job of lobbying Sacramento to get project money to solve some of these things. I know that Senator Bell would be more than willing, Jim Bell would be more, Silicon Valley would be more than willing to help on mental health. He is a champion for mental health. I joint authored a bill with him before on mental health, and I know that he would do it again to give us a pilot program to solve some of the mental health issues in the homeless population. So I know there's great opportunity there. So I think that we're spending an awful lot of money on red tape. You know, if it takes 6 years to get through the planning department, we're not doing our job. If it takes a year to get an answer on whether you can rent a camping space in the county, that's wrong. And yet, that's what constituents are telling me, that they're going through these experiences. So what I want to know is what kind of system that we have that would allow somebody to have to wait 6 years to rebuild their home after a fire?
Yeah.
Or what's wrong with the system that if you take kids camping from the inner city for 2 weeks in August and you ask for that permit in January and you don't have an answer by June?
Yeah.
What's wrong with the system? I think that we have to be much more laser focused about the goals, and the goals should be serving our constituents. We as citizens don't serve the county government. The county government's supposed to serve us.
Yeah.
And I think that we've lost our way down the road.
Almost done. I just have another couple of questions.
Helped me a great deal. And I don't know if you know this, Miriam, but I used to have meetings all the time in my office. Every Friday, I'd have 5 or 6 meetings where we would invite everybody who was on both sides of any issue to come in and talk to me so I can make the best possible decision.
That's a great idea.
It's very hard for me to fathom without walking their property line, without going out there and speaking to them to make a value decision. And I want to be fair to everybody. You know, it's my job to make government work for them. It's not my job to force government on them. And so I want to be open-minded when I go out there and talk to them. And they're absolutely going to have access to me. You know, that's the reason why so many people, I believe, showed up to my open houses is because they could talk to me and they had access to me.
Yeah.
And my cell phone number has been published for 12 years. In fact, in the last election, it was on the ballot and I didn't realize it went out to the entire state. 40 million Californians have my cell number.
There you go. County supervisors also oversee the county sheriff. And certainly the high rate of deaths in the county jail has been an issue. When you were in Sacramento, Joel, you had the opportunity to actually introduce and support a number of criminal justice reforms, not all of them, you know, coming from the law and order perspective necessarily. You had kind of a mix up there. But I wondered if you'd like to just take a minute to tell our listeners a little bit about your record on criminal justice reforms, and then if you have any specific ideas for dealing with law enforcement reforms in jail or anywhere else down here, what your views are.
So for 12 years, I served as vice chair of public safety. And I worked with the chair on many reforms. I'm very proud to have received the State Sheriff's Legislator Year Award, the Deputy DA's Legislator Year Award, Crime Victims Legislator Year Award, and the Innocence Project gave me a Legislator Year Award.
Wow.
I took a very balanced approach. I don't believe that innocent people should serve in our prisons, but I do believe that we should be apprehending and prosecuting criminals. But there has to be a balance. Even criminals have to be treated in a humane way. And we had some incidences in our prison system where people were abusing prisoners even to their death. And I worked across party lines to do oversight hearings to ensure that we kept to our practices and those people were rooted out, and yet we protected our correctional officers. You know, unfortunately, prison is a really rough area. Some of the prisoners like to take body fluids and throw it in the officers' faces. It's called gassing.
Yeah, a little.
And it puts their lives at risk. So you have to balance, but you can't let that correctional officer abuse the prisoner for doing it. They need to get more years. They need to get put in a position where they can't gas future folks. But that's not a right to beat them to their death. And so it's a tightrope of walking, but I think that we deserve the very best from government, and nobody should die in our custody. And I know in recent reports that we've had problems in our own jails. And after elected, I'd like to investigate it further to ensure that we're maintaining all of the rules and regulations that protect both the sheriff's deputies and the criminals that are serving in our jails.
Okay. Can you tell us who your major endorsements are that you're most proud of? And also, where can listeners get more information about your campaign?
Well, you certainly go to my website, Joel Anderson for Supervisor 2020, and it's easy to find. The big thing, in all my endorsements are on it. So I have over 45 local electeds who have endorsed me in the district. But I'm also proud to have the endorsement of the Pacific Southwest Realtors Association, the San Diego Realtors Association, San Diego Medical Society's endorsement, Gun Owners of California, San Diego Gun Owners, Off-Road Coalition's endorsement. But I also have over 3,000 average Joes, just ordinary citizens who have endorsed me. They're all on my website. We have more endorsements than that. Governor Pete Wilson's endorsed me. I have a couple of legislative leaders that have endorsed me. But what I'm most proud of are the citizens. You know, they don't have an angle. They're not trying to make a name for themselves. They're just supporting somebody that they know has their back. And that's what means the most to me. That's why I had so many community coffees. I'm not always going to vote with you, but I'm always going to listen to every concern you have, and I'm going to be as fair as possible. That's what I've done in the past, and I've never shirked it, and I've never turned around and didn't stand for my positions or hide from them. And if you offer me a better idea, I'm going to change my mind. Okay. And that's why I was able to do 453 bills with Democrats.
Very good. I want to give you a chance to share with our listeners anything else that you would like them to know about yourself and your goals if elected that we haven't already asked about, Joel.
I'm going to be laser focused on the homeless issue. My door is always going to be open. I'm going to be working on the cost of living here in attainable houses because I want our kids to grow up in the same community that we live in. They need jobs, they need career opportunities, and they need housing. And I don't think that anybody should have to travel out of state to visit their grandkids. I think that we should provide for our own, and we should be doing it today.
Well, we are out of time today, but I want to thank you so much, Senator Anderson. Listeners, if you just tuned in or you tuned in late, we've been speaking with former State Senator Joel Anderson, who is one of the four candidates running in the 2nd Supervisorial District. Now, we have invited all of the candidates in this race, and we look forward to having some of them on upcoming shows. Senator, thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
This was a delightful show. Thank you so much for inviting me.